Good morning. Start into a. It's hot in here, ain't it? I want to start into. I'm going to preach about hell this morning. No. It's not that hot. I have a four sermon series before we start a summer series, and starting to think about things that maybe we had in our lives at one point that we've kind of lost. So I'm not talking about losing your keys or your wallet or even your car in the Walmart parking lot. I'm talking about character attributes that would serve you well in your walk with the Lord. And so we're going to talk about those for a little bit. There are some people, I have people in my life who want to quote a Bible verse for every situation they find themselves in. Do you have anybody in your life like that? It's like they got a quote for whatever it is. Well, one of my favorite comics is John Crist, and he describes a lady who has a Bible verse for everything she was seeing at the mall. So that'll kick us off. Check this out.
I was going to go to Macy's, but Dillard's is having a sale. Man plans his steps, but the Lord directs his path. Look at these purses. Excuse me, this is fashion now? Lean not on your own understanding. Oh, Spencer's Gifts? Guard your heart. Finish line? Oh, yes, run the race I have set before you. 30% off all things work together for good. Oh, would you look at these here? Run and not grow weary, walk and not faint. No, thank you. I don't need any skincare samples. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Oh, there's Starbucks, thank heaven, streams in the desert. Look at these watches for such a time as this. Look at all this baggage. No, thank you. I have left my burdens at the cross. Oh, I love this bedding. Yes, all who are weary, he will give you rest. Look at these knives. These are perfect. Iron sharpens iron. Oh, man does not live by bread alone. Hey, Adam, you want to take a bite of this? Man's original sin. Microsoft only for me, thank you. Oh, Lululemon, he will not tempt you beyond what you can handle. Oh, Zales, absolutely not. My treasure is in heaven. Payless is having a sale. Lead me not into temptation. Oh, judge all you want to. You without sin cast the first stone. Oh, love this hat. Look at this. Anyone who is in Christ is a new creation. I will dwell in the Nestle Toll House of the Lord forever. I come all the way in here for a sale and they don't have my size. Jesus, please, he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion.
When I was a teenager, there was a verse that my mom and dad threw around at us all the time, and it was not out of context. And it might be hard for you all to believe, but I was not an easy teenager to deal with. You sound so shocked. If your teens are easy to deal with, you are among all people most blessed, right? I sometimes think that teenagers are God's revenge on mankind. I think one day the Lord looked down and he said, let's see how they like it to create someone in their own image who denies their existence. You know, I've read the Bible cover to cover 6 times in my life. It never says how old the devil was when he rejected God's authority. So I believe it must have been 16. Devil got his driver's license, drove down to Georgia. You know the rest of the story, right? Heck of a fiddle player. The verse that seemed to highlight my parents over and over was Hebrews chapter 12, the 11th verse. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Discipline. We don't even like the word discipline. And when we hear it, we have thoughts of punishment. It's like the end of something fun and the beginning of something hard. So you put the word discipline, which we don't like anyway, with the word spiritual, and you have spiritual disciplines. And all of a sudden, it makes those things that we can do to vitalize our relationship with the Lord, it makes them unpleasant as well. Or we just don't want to do them. For instance, spiritual disciplines list looks something like this. Prayer, Bible study, corporate and private worship, scripture memorization, confession, accountability, fasting, regular giving, all those things that we do in our journey that draw us closer to the Lord, and they are described as spiritual disciplines. But nobody wants to hear about discipline. So let me give you 4 words as we start that are equated with spiritual disciplines. First word, performance, especially for those of us who grew up in a church. Because when these things were discussed, it was more about what people might see, whether you're there in attendance, whether you're giving in the offering, whether you're a person of prayer. And this can be a problem when spiritual disciplines are more about performance, then we start pretending as if we have it when we really don't. We're more like actors than we are believers. Years ago in London, a famous actor was in the middle of a performance when he was informed that a fire had started in the theater, and rather than making an announcement and causing panic, they wanted the actor to go out center stage and calmly make an announcement and ask the people to file out of the theater. But he did, and he did it so well that they did not believe him because they thought he was acting. And so they began to applaud. And the flames actually came closer to where the people were. And of course, the actor became more urgent in his voice and more demonstrative and impassioned. But the audience only responded with more applause because they thought he was doing a marvelous job of acting like a fire had started in the theater. Not everyone made it out. They had plenty of time had the announcement been made at the beginning of this process. But because they thought he was acting, some never made it. The problem was the acting was so good that nobody believed what he was saying. Let me analogize, since that's what I'm prone to do. I wonder how many people will be lost in flames because they didn't really believe the message coming from some who claim to be believers, but in truth, they're just really good actors. That's why spiritual discipline is so important, because what is practiced in private can become prominent in public, not for performance sake, but as part of your everyday life. Here's a second word, punishment. Spiritual disciplines are equated with punishment. My childhood was filled with discipline and punishment. I was always part of the collateral damage of all the things my brothers did wrong. And I do not want you to talk to them to get a different story either. I grew up in a Proverbs 23 household. And you may be surprised to find this is still in the Bible. And Kurt, this might be the kind of thing that gets us kicked off of YouTube. I don't know. Even reading Proverbs 23. I'll dumb it down a little bit with the Message version. Don't be afraid to correct your young ones. A spanking won't kill them. A good spanking, in fact, might save them from something worse than death. That's still in the Bible, y'all. Still in the Bible. Still applicable. Still works. Works so much on me. Not only did I get the spanking, I had to memorize the verse and write it down 100 times. King James, that doesn't take the sting out. King James, listen to this. Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. There's some comfort, right? This won't kill you. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell. Now you would think that the beating would be enough, but not with my dad. With my dad, he would not only beat me with the rod that he believed taught me right from wrong, and then he would take away things that I really liked. He put a quick end to the most fun I ever had as a kid. On Saturday mornings, I was about a mile and a half off the main road. We lived back this road. It's named after my grandpa. It's called Leiter Road, and he lived back there, sold the property to my mom and dad, and the rest is history. So it's a mile and a half to the main drag, which is 129 that takes you from Versailles to Vivi. Going by our lane, you can build up speed to about 50, 55. I think the speed limit's 45 or 50 through there. So on Saturday mornings, what I would do is ride my motorcycle, that's what I called it, to the end of the lane and just sit there with my mom's hair dryer and point it at cars as they went by. It was the coolest thing ever. You see people chalking them up and slowing down. And occasionally, I would chase some cars on my moped. And every now and then, one of them would pull over. And I'd just ride by my moped and just wave at him. It was awesome until my dad found out what I was doing. Someone reported me and put an end to my fun. Not only did he not spare the rod, he took away my moped and made sure on Saturday mornings I was doing something other than riding out to the end of the lane. You know, I've always associated discipline with some form of punishment. So I think we do the same thing with these spiritual disciplines. It's like, man, if I mess up, I need to pray more. I think in Catholicism, you can say a few more Hail Marys, our fathers. But for us, man, I need to pray. I better read my Bible more because I really screwed up yesterday. As if that fixes it. And then those good things that are drawing you closer to God, all of a sudden they become forms of punishment and they lose their appeal. Here's a third word, penance. This is the prevalent thought that we always have to fight. I've preached this till I'm blue in the face. We cannot earn God's favor. You do not have a ledger where he keeps the good deeds and the bad deeds. And if the good deeds outweigh the bad deeds, then somehow you make it to heaven. It doesn't work that way. That's not only not in the Bible, that's anti-Bible. When we believe that we can pay penance for our sins, you know what in essence we're saying? Jesus, what you did was not enough. Who wants to say that? When you feel like you can make up for all the mess ups in your life, you're in essence looking at the cross and saying, I know what you did for me, but that's not enough. I need to fix this myself. So this list of spiritual disciplines, do you associate them with performance or punishment or penance? Me and my dad stopped at Kroger's several years ago, and he wanted to get mom some flowers. On the way home, we're in the checkout line, and the cashier's an older lady. This was in Madison. And she looked at the flowers, and she said, uh-oh, somebody's in trouble. Her assumption was the reason that Dad was practicing generosity was penance for something he had done. What she didn't know was she was exactly right. He was in the doghouse. My dad would never just buy flowers for my mom. The only time my mom got a flowers is if my dad had a funeral and brought them home from the graveyard. I think I got a picture, Terry. Pull that up. There it is right there. That's the flowers that mom would get. So what's the word the Lord wants us to associate with a spiritual discipline if it's not penance and it's not punishment and it's not performance? Well, I got a word for you. How about this? Pursuit. Pursuit. The more I pray, the more I read, the more I worship with you all, the more we sing together, the more I give, the more I serve. I'm pursuing God in a deeper way, getting to know him better. All my heart, my soul, my mind, my strength, that kind of thing. To pursue him shows he matters to you more than anything else in the world. We used to sing this chorus, Psalm 42:1, as the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, O God. Can you truly say that? Can you truly sit here this morning and tell me that your soul pants for God? Because I have a sneaking, uneasy feeling that I could put up a list of 10 other things that your soul pants for more than it does God. So that took me to Psalm 115, which is all about idol worship. And this may sound a bit outdated or archaic, but I think it applies more now than it did then. Psalm 115:1 says this, not to us, Lord, not to us, but to your name be the glory because of your love and faithfulness. That's one we should read together, all right? And don't sound like a mindless zombie, all right? Not to us, Lord, not to us, but to your name be the glory because of your love and faithfulness. Spiritual disciplines help you get yourself off the throne in your life and put God where he belongs. How many of you have been to Burger King in the last few months? Through the drive-thru. Okay, a lot of Burger King folks. Have you noticed how they greet you now? It's totally different. They've had a marketing campaign and they've changed the way they greet. Pull in there today, and I guarantee you, because I think they have to give you free food if they don't say it, pull in there and they will say, welcome to Burger King, where you rule. That's the new thing. Welcome to Burger King, where you rule. Now, I have been there early in the morning, like 5:30-ish. I've been there late at night, and they still say it, but it has no feeling whatsoever. You pull in there late at night, and they'll say, welcome to Burger King, where you rule. It's like they don't even believe what they're saying. And I think some of us actually do believe that we rule. And because we like to occupy the throne in our lives rather than letting God, the psalmist says, not to me, not to us, but to you, God, you rule. You want to start your prayer out and steal Burger King's slogan? You could do that. Our Father in heaven, you rule. So let me share some symptoms in your life that may indicate you're too focused on you, all right? This sermon today is like a trip to the dentist. You'll thank me later, maybe not right now. I gave you four words. Let me give you seven symptoms. First of all, if you're too much into you, there's a general sense of entitlement. Whatever comes your way, you think you deserve, and whatever good you don't yet have, you'll say that's not fair. Symptom number two, there's a lack of gratitude when you think it's all about you. Because then you feel like you deserve whatever comes your way, and you don't appreciate anything. Because you don't believe anyone else did anything to bring anything to you, because you deserve everything you get. Your attitude, instead of being grateful, is, well, it's about time. It's hard to put God on the throne when you have a lack of gratitude. Symptom number three, you're easily offended. Preaching to a world now, ain't I? When things are always about you, you take yourself too seriously. People are always having to be careful what they say around you. Walking on eggshells. Oh, here comes so-and-so in the room. You can't joke about this. You can't say this. Don't mention her eye color. Don't do that. Easily offended. Over breakfast one morning, a woman said to her husband, "I bet you don't even know what day it is." He said, "Of course I do." And off he went to work, offended that she would even say that. At 10 o'clock, the woman's doorbell rang. She answered it to be greeted by a dozen long-stemmed roses. At 1, a foil-wrapped 2-pound box of her favorite chocolate delivered. Later in the afternoon, a boutique delivered a brand-new designer dress. The woman couldn't wait for her husband to come home. First the flowers, then the chocolate, then the dress. She said, "Honey, I've never had a better Groundhog Day in all my life." Listen, to everyone who gets offended by comedians telling personal jokes, have you ever wished you could just slap them silly? Well, all I can say is where there's a will, there's a way. How about that? I'm assuming my picture showed up, right? Listen, if you don't make everything about you, then the rest of us won't have to walk on eggshells when you come into the room. When you are too into you, you are easily offended. Here's another way to recognize the wrong person is on the throne in your life. Your self-worth comes from comparisons. How you feel about yourself is judged by someone else's behavior. So you've got a neighbor who is a spawn of the devil, who beats his wife and kicks his kids out and drinks all day long and cusses the Lord's name. And you say, "Well, you know what? I'm pretty good compared to neighbor Joe." But you're comparing yourself to the wrong neighbor. How about neighbor Jesus? Now all of a sudden, what looked pretty good doesn't look very good at all. You'll run into one of two dangers every time you compare yourself to somebody else. And I've done a good job of this in my life, and I hope I can continue that. If you compare yourself to someone who's doing it better, you will feel defeated. If you compare yourself to someone who's doing it worse, you will feel prideful. Either way, it's not good to compare yourself to other people. Your self-worth doesn't come from what somebody else is doing or not doing. Symptom five, you're too into yourself when you criticize and blame. Instead of focusing on what needs to change in your heart and taking responsibility for your actions and the equation in your life and your own emotions, it's always somebody else's fault. Symptom six, you're too into yourself if you're constantly anxious. That's why there's such a correlation between social media and anxiety. And the more you make it about you, the more anxiety will pile on. Number seven, you're defensive. Maybe right now, while I'm preaching at you. Go through these symptoms and you're thinking, I'm not sure this is accurate. That's not really me. And meanwhile, there are people sitting all around. You're like, let him have it, Mark. I mean, you're nailing him today. And we need to pray that prayer the psalmist prayed. Not about me, God, not about us. To you be the glory. Let's read on. Verse 2. Why do the nations say, "Where is their God?" Our God is in heaven. He does whatever pleases him. But their idols are silver and gold, made by human hands. Now, you may be thinking, idol worship is archaic. Why would we talk about that? I would suggest to you that God has more competition today than he's ever had. When I was in India, they have idols of silver and gold in their homes, and they would sit in a circle around it, and they would stare at it and talk to it and pray with it all day long. Now, you say, well, that ain't us. I'm glad we don't do that. I'm glad we don't put anything in the center of our homes that might constantly take our attention, do we? Oh, maybe we do. That's not a problem for us, is it? I love that message when you've been binging on Netflix or one of the streaming services. I don't know how many of you had this come up on your TV, this message right here. How many of you have seen that on your TV? Get out of the house! Even they can't believe you're still watching. I mean, they're asking you, seriously? They might as well put other words. Seriously, you're still watching? Can't believe you're still watching. My granddaughter did another video. She's a TikTok video star now. And she's mostly Bible stories, which I like. But she did an instructional video about hanging a TV on the wall. And I told Lizerne I'd show it. It applies to the point we're talking about right now. So check out Navy's video.
This is a video about kinds of tools you can use. I tell you something real quick. It's an electric drill. These are the drill bits. A measuring thing because it's like flathead. And a Phillips head. How you tell where the studs are on the wall.
What?
This is a socket rack. Today's video, it will be like about building. You gotta be careful with these tools because some of them are sharp. And you're gonna tighten these up very tight. And it's really hard. So this is not for kids. Kids can't do this because it's really hard. And the most part is dangerous.
Oh.
You are working, it's important to stay hydrated. I am drinking water because I am doing a really important job. I'm hanging a TV up on the wall so we can watch a little bit of Grinch. Stay hydrated. Mm-hmm. Mark it in the world. Mark it in the world. Whoa, that's crazy. Bye, that's today's video.
That girl's going places, it just scares me where. So in India, not only do they have idols of gold and silver in the home to gather around and stare at all day, they have pocket idols that they carry individually throughout the day. They can take them out and give them their attention or affection. It brings them comfort. So here, again, you're saying, well, we don't have anything in our pocket that we take out throughout the day when we need a little comfort or distraction, do we? No, we would never do that, would we? Now, I can hear the objections. Well, preacher, you can't compare televisions to idols made of silver and gold, and you can't compare phones to pocket idols. Well, the truth is, yes, I can, because while they have different names and they are different items, they all become similar idols. Again, God has never had more competition than he has right now. So in thinking about ridding yourself of idols and giving God the place in our lives where he deserves, the place where he rules, then I have a few questions before I close. I gave you 4 words, 7 symptoms. Let's do a review. The 4 words were performance, punishment, penance, and pursuit. The 7 symptoms were, if you're too into yourself, there's a general sense of entitlement, there's a lack of gratitude, you're easily offended, your self-worth comes from comparisons, you criticize and blame, you're constantly anxious and you're defensive. And I want to close with 5 questions, and these might sting a little bit, but your answer to these questions reveal whether or not you've let someone take the place of God on the throne in your life. You've elevated something or someone to the status of idols in your life, and your attention goes to them. You're not able to say, not to us, O Lord, but to you be the glory. First question, with what are you most disappointed in life? This week you had a disappointment. What's the one thing you're most disappointed with? And nothing wrong with disappointment. Don't misunderstand. It's not a sin to be disappointed. But some people live in a perpetual state of disappointment, and it's disproportionate to the situation they're going through. And it reveals something about where they put their hope, or reveals something about what they think is really important. I'll give you an example. Are you more disappointed your youngest child lost the basketball championship, or your oldest child has fallen away from church and no longer walks with the Lord? What are you disappointed in the most? That will reveal who's on the throne in your life. Here's another question. What do you complain most about? I guess if I wanted a fully transparent answer, I'd talk to the people you live with. Now, this might be painful to hear, but are you constantly complaining about your spouse or your children or about politicians or world leaders or the state of affairs in this country? Then that may be an indication you've let something become too important in your life. You need to let God be on the throne and stand back and say, you rule. Question 3, what do you sacrifice your time and your money for? Jesus said, wherever your money is, there your heart is also. You may not want those two things linked together, but Jesus said that's how it works. A small church was raising money for a new piano, and before they started singing, the preacher said, whoever gives the most in the offering today can pick out their three favorite hymns. So the offering was passed, and there for the first time in the history of the offering of that small church was a $100 bill. And the preacher said, whoever gave the $100 bill, you come forward and you get to pick out three hymns. So this 60-year-old woman walks to the front. She said, I'm the one who gave the $100. He says, go ahead. She pointed her finger to the pews and she said, I'll take him and I'll take him and I'll take him. What do you sacrifice your time and your money for? Question four, where do you go when you're hurt? When you need comfort or help or hope, where do you go first? That might tell you who's on the throne in your life. And how about this one? What brings you the most joy in life? And these might be good things. Grandbabies are awful special, aren't they? These might be good things. What brings you the most joy? I'm afraid we've let the good things replace the giver of those good things. And again, the psalmist weighs in on this in verses 5 through 7. Check this out. They have mouths. This is the idols that we worship. They have mouths. That's a TV and a phone. They have mouths but cannot speak, eyes but cannot see. They have ears but cannot hear, noses but cannot smell. They have hands but cannot feel, feet but cannot walk, nor can they utter a sound with their throats. In other words, they don't deliver. They won't come through for you. They won't. Need something else to rule in your life. And then he finishes out this section with verses 8 and 9. Those who make them will be like them, and so will all who trust in them. All you Israelites, trust in the Lord. He is their help and shield. Can I interpret that for you? If you're not careful, your idols will become your identity. And you may be at a crossroads in your life this morning. Maybe you've let something other than God occupy the throne of your life. Maybe you'd have to say your children's schedule rules, or your financial situation rules, or your current entertainment rules, or your plan for retirement rules. Heck, you drive through Burger King, you rule. But the truth is, there's only one ruler. Maybe you've lost the disciplines that have helped keep you connected to that ruler. I was with Navy yesterday, just me and her. And we had a ball. We went to Skyline. Danita has a Skyline shirt on. There she is. She is dressed appropriately for church. I like it. And drove the golf cart. Buzz has a golf cart. Drove it to the playground. And I should have known better, but she said, Poppy, try to walk up the slide. It was a pretty steep slide. I said, all right, I can do that. No problem. I got a running start, and I'm running and trying to, you know. About halfway up, my foot slips, and over the side I go. And I'm pretty high up, and I landed on my shoulder, and all these cut-up tires they use for mulch. And my elbow's all skinned up, and I can't feel. I thought I broke my shoulder. I mean, I can't move my arm. And I told Karen when I got home, she's like, well, did Navy freak out? She sat up on the top, watching me with her arms folded, saying, you shouldn't have tried that. It was her idea. And honestly, I'm thinking, I'm going to have her come call 911. I can't move. And all she wants to do is compare boo-boos and how hers are worse than mine. So I lay there in the tires, and she goes about playing. He doesn't even stop to talk to me very long. Just waiting for me to get up. So I said, do you have a first aid kit at the house? And she said, I do. She said, I'll doctor you, Poppy. I said, that's fine. We'll go, and I got to, you know, clean this up. And she said, but before we go, could you push me on the swing? Yeah, I can. So with one hand, I can. So we walk over to the swing set. She gets on, and she has said this before. But she'll always say, hi, like all kids do. Push me higher. Get her going real high. And she'll always say when I'm a swinger, push me high enough that I can see Daddy. And so I'll push. But this time she added to that. And I said, well, I hope I can push you high enough you can see Daddy. She said, yeah, but Jesus will push me back down. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, he's got more stuff for me to do here. 5 years old and realizes, while she's here, and it's not her time, that she's got more stuff to do along the way. I was flying back to Cincinnati from the East Coast years ago, was listening to a lady tell a story on my side of the plane. I always got to have a window seat. I get too closed in without it. And she was talking about a homecoming. She hadn't been home for a long time. There was going to be a party. She was real happy, and it was kind of cool. But I'm also listening to somebody on the other side of the plane talk about a child that had leukemia and how they're worried about losing it. And I looked out the windows on the left side of the plane where the person with the child was talking, and all you could see outside the window was gray, stormy. But on my side of the plane, where the woman was talking about the homecoming, out my window, it was sunny. It was such a contrast. And I had an aha moment. I don't have them very often, but I did. And my aha moment was this. It didn't matter which window I looked through. My plane was still going to Cincinnati. Right? My final destination was not determined by what I saw and heard and experienced along the way. And because of Jesus, my final destination is already determined, but how I choose to travel there is up to me. And I can do it trusting Him and praying to Him and reading about Him and worshiping Him and gathering together to study about Him. I can do it that way. It's up to me. But my destination is determined because of Jesus. So whatever I feel along the way and whatever I see out my window or whatever I see out your window doesn't change the fact that that's where I'm going. So I'm going to find the discipline that I've lost. Start doing the things that bring me closer to God as I travel to heaven. Not to us, oh God. Not to me. But to you be the glory. Welcome, Father, where you rule. Amen.